Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. It's a direct special and there's a voice that you probably haven't heard in a while, and it's not yours, Anton.
Who is that on the other side of the internet? Of course, Mike. It's absolutely lovely to have you back, and I won't lie, at the tip of my tongue, I just want to ask you all about what you've been doing on the Switch-wise, but sadly, we have far too much Switch to discuss this week.
I know, it's ridiculous, and I have been playing some. It's been busy and difficult. I'm sure Al's been telling everyone what I've been up to, or at least a version of what I've been up to. And yes, it's I have been playing a lot, but we'll come on to that another time because it's not important right now, because we had a direct today. Now, we don't have Alistair with us tonight. Unfortunately, he has a Himalayan trek to do this evening, which he reckons he can do by the time he gets up for work in the morning and get back here. So that's fair. And he's going to be doing it in a kilt, so that's wonderful. However, he won't be here, but we have a chance to talk about the Direct. And it happened today. It was quite a late, as it always is, announcement. We found out yesterday, and we had a Direct today, and we're about to go through it. And I'm excited to talk about it.
Indeed, it is quite a unique one in the fact that, if you're not aware, as one of our international listeners, Nintendo, they released a slightly different method this time, especially for the UK audience.
Yeah, so I watched it in the North American stream, but due to recent events in the UK with the passing of the Queen, it was just dropped as a kind of video at 4 o'clock. Is that how they did it?
Indeed, which is very considerate of Nintendo during the recent circumstances, but nevertheless, we've had it now, we've delved in, we've had a little bit of time to let it muse, and I think with that, we should jump in.
Okay, let's fire through them. Now, this is where my memory has to come into play, because I did watch it live. Without further ado, Intelligent Systems announced Fire Emblem Engage for the Nintendo Switch, published by Nintendo. This was the very first thing we got. It's a modern tactical turn-based RPG. It's coming out on the 20th of January. Huge shout out to our Patreon, Carrie, who we know will be absolutely delighted about this. Well, I know that she is anyway. This was a big one for Fire Emblem fans because there's been talk of a new Fire Emblem. It looks like it's really well done. It's got a real kind of Fire Emblem aesthetic. At first, I was kind of thinking it maybe gone quite far away from Fire Emblem. But then when I saw the sort of school environment or the kind of building and the education environment, I assume that's what it is. Then I was like, okay, now I can see where the Fire Emblem is. And I know that Three Houses was a huge success. So I think this one could do well.
Indeed. The Fire Emblem franchise is just a franchise that goes from great to great. It was one of the kind of, you know, CD grade Nintendo IPs comparative to all the other incredible IPs they had. And then with Awakenings on 3DS and then Three Houses and now Engage, it's just been stepping up every single time. And I think that's reflective in what we've seen it with Engage. It looks absolutely stunning, set 1,000 years after the events of Three Houses. The leaks were right. We've got blue and red hair, multiple protagonists. It looks absolutely stunning as a Switch title. It's really pushing the hardware. And yeah, I'm really delighted to see this kind of getting the full treatment it deserves. And, you know, the franchise is clearly getting pushed forward here. The only bad thing I could say is the logo's a little bit lazy. But, you know, the original part of it, the bit that says Fire Emblem, that's so good. They just slap some text on the bottom of it. But that's the only bad thing I've got to say, because this game is looking exceptional.
Yeah, and there's also going to be a Divine Edition, which is going to come out. It's going to include an art book, a steelbook, art cards, and posters, which I suspect Carrie will be buying along with all the other Fire Emblem super fans. And they really started strong, the Direct. This was a really strong, out the gate, here we go, huge game, huge franchise, huge fan base, let's go. And then Hazel Light announced It Takes Two for Nintendo Switch, published by EA. It's a two-player co-op puzzle adventure game featuring free friend pass, coming out on the 4th of November 2022. Again, I thought this was quite strong. It's a game that is perfect for co-op. I love the fact that you can play it locally with two different systems, or you can play it locally together, or they've given you different options, which is exactly what you want when you have a co-op game.
Indeed. This is a title I've played on other platforms, and at first I was disappointed when I saw it because it has had a bit of a graphical downgrade, but at the core of it, the fantastic gameplay that Hazelight put together here stands true. And, you know, this was a game of the year last year for 2021 on other platforms, and now we've finally got a Nintendo Switch. I think with the nature of the Joy-Cons and with the Friend Pass, it's just a natural for the platform. We love our co-op games, and this is one of the best.
Koei Tecmo Games announced Project Zero Mask of the Lunar Eclipse for the Nintendo Switch. This was published by Nintendo as well. It's a Japanese survival horror title focusing on surviving supernatural events, coming out in 2023. And this one had kind of shades of old school horror Nintendo games. I'm thinking it's linked to one of them. To be honest, I don't know the franchise, but I'm sure you can help us out, Anton.
Indeed, I believe this is the fourth or fifth entry in the franchise, following up Maiden of Blackwater, which recently had a really good port on the Nintendo Switch. And yeah, it's a game where you can only see the ghosts, or spirits, shall we say, via the means of a camera. And, you know, limited battery, you have
is
to really...
Fatal Frame related, or is that...
Same franchise,
one?
Yes. That was you. The right. American title, so if you're familiar with Fatal Frame, same deal here. And overall, it looks fairly solid, and oddly enough, it is a Nintendo IP as well.
Yeah, it's weird because I remember the Fatal Frame link with Nintendo, and I think was it the Wii U that had a really strong title in this franchise.
Indeed, Maiden of Blackwater,
right,
real good.
Yeah. Then Monolith showcased Xenoblade Chronicles 3 Expansion Pack Volume 2 for the Nintendo Switch, published by Nintendo. You play as a new hero, Ino or Ino, I can't remember, and engage in intense challenge battles. So it's a sort of robotic hero this time, coming out on the 14th of October. It looked really good. It looked well done. Xenoblade is a fantastic franchise. The third one is the kind of the optimum version from what people have said. And... even the battle system looks like it's taken on the sort of Torna Xenoblade 2 approach rather than Xenoblade 2 itself, which is great because I prefer that. And it looks good. I haven't even begun to delve into any of that. I don't have it, but I think for those fans that have already fired through it, this is welcome news.
Indeed. You know, they have been really rattling through these DLCs for Xenoblade Chronicles 3. But nevertheless, they look to be of quality. I do like the slightly mechanical elements leading into the main line of the Xenoblade Chronicles titles, as it's given me loose whiffs of what came before with Xenoblade Chronicles X and makes me hopeful for what could come in future.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that too. I must admit, I thought that was a good move. Purple Lamp Studios showcased SpongeBob SquarePants The Cosmic Shake for the Nintendo Switch. It's published by THQ Nordic. It's a 3D platformer featuring the original cast of the cartoons, coming next year. This is going to be a real fan favorite, I think, because the other SpongeBob game that we have is really well reviewed, and actually a lot of people really like that game. I think this will do well.
Indeed, it looks really charming, as we see, especially in the cinema space right now. Multiversal ideas are just very prevalent and very on brand at the moment, and this has taken full advantage of that to not just take the established world of SpongeBob and carve out a little niche from it, but really take on all edges of it, including every single meme under the sun. It looks fun. I'm just hoping it lives up to the classic kind of Bikini Bottom game. That's what I'm hoping for.
Bikini Bottom. Yeah, I actually bought that recently, physical. I got a good deal on it, so I will at some point delve into that world. And just on a side note, I saw that my Ring doorbell just alerted me to someone at the door. I looked and it's a spider. Oh, so
creepy.
Very sensitive camera. Either that or very big spider. Next up, Imagineer showcased Fitness Boxing Fist of the North Star for the Nintendo Switch, published by Nintendo. It's a fitness game in which you'll train alongside the cast of Fist of the North Star, coming out on in March next year. Weird one, this, because when it came in, I thought, oh yeah, that's, I recognize this. This is that Fist of the, I've seen this franchise before. And then I realized it was a fitness boxing tie-in, which is kind of cool. I kind of like that. I've always said we should have more fitness type games on the Switch. It's not one I'm going to be particularly interested in, but I think, you know, there's going to be an audience for it.
Indeed, this is such an odd one, and I imagine there's probably a few folk out there that are a little disappointed that it's not Fist of the North Star 3, as those games on, I believe, Xbox 360, and I think the second one made it to Wii U, were absolutely brilliant titles. But nevertheless, the fitness boxing series on Nintendo Switch has been one of the surprise Nintendo success stories. I think nobody really expected it to be as good as they were, but they're feature-packed, and now this one has an over-the-top anime veil over it.
Yeah, Game Swing showcased Oddballers for the Nintendo Switch, published by Ubisoft. It's dubbed as a hilariously hard-hitting party game based on Dodgeball, coming out early 2023. My first impressions, I kind of half wasn't paying attention, and in hindsight, looking back, I think this could be a real fun party game. Hopefully gameplay is always key when it comes to party games. Hopefully it's good, and with Ubisoft involved, I would hope it would be.
Indeed, I think, sadly, the fact that it's Ubisoft tie has pushed it up into the big boy direct rather than an indie showcase has maybe harmed this game in many ways, because it's really up there competing with the big dogs. But overall, this has very much the aura and quality I would expect of a Team 17 game. It looks like a fun, solid party game, and sadly, I do feel like Ubisoft will charge a little bit too much as the publisher, but if it was at an appropriate price, I always love a party game, Mike.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. And craving party games right now. Tunic Team have announced Tunic for the Nintendo Switch, published by Finji. It's a top-down RPG. It's coming out on the 27th of September. I'm going to have to refresh my memory on this one. But I think I remember which one it is. I'm going to double-check. But what was your impression?
Yeah, this is a title that I just absolutely adore the essence of. If you're not familiar, it's had a very successful release on the Xbox platform, and it is basically a old school, you know, original Zelda cell game. It is a full homage with gorgeous 3D graphics, and what's really novel and unique about it is it's taken in all aspects of that era of gaming where you actually have to use a manual inside of the game to figure out how things work. That is so cool, Mike.
I think that's great, and it's a really interesting way of sort of approaching it. And yeah, again, it's that old school thing of going into the manual to get codes and going into the manual to read the map and all that great stuff. So yeah, I remember the one that we're talking about now, and I thought this looked pretty solid, and it comes out on the 27th of September. Then we got an announcement of three titles, and from Forever Entertainment SA, they showcased Front Mission First Remake, number three, the remake. It's published by Square Enix. The first one coming out in November, and then the other two will be 2023 and then in the future. Again, this is not one that I would have particularly been interested in personally, I don't think, although I do like it when I see Square Enix as a logo. So what was your take on it?
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomised genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM, then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
Yeah, these are a slightly lukewarm moment in Nintendo Direct for me. The Front Mission games are indeed classics. However, the reputation Forever Entertainment's built for me is a company that has bought up iconic games such as Panzer Dragoon, and then they do look not very good ports on them. And looking at the gameplay, you know, these would have been okay as ports, but this is not the quality I would have expected of a remade game in 2022. And the fact they're doing all three of them is a little bit disappointed, and the idea that they're getting done as a bulk, I don't know, these are just not looking like the quality I would have expected. And the fact we've seen them twice at a Nintendo Direct, I just don't think they make the cut.
Yeah, I must admit, I was kind of similar when it came to this one. And then we started off with the theme of Farming Sims, RPG and Farming Sims. This will be forever what this Direct will be known for. But Marvelous announced Story of Seasons, A Wonderful Life for Nintendo Switch, self-published. It's a remake of the GameCube cult classic farming game. It's coming out in the summer. I thought this looks really solid and great, and I know that there's a lot of fans of the original. I recognised that kind of as soon as that came on, and I think this will be really popular. Not going to be for me, but I think there's going to be a lot of people that will be interested.
Indeed. You know, I think there's already a lot of farming games on Switch, and there's a lot more in this Direct, but Story of Seasons is one of the best, and this looks like the best one yet. I thought what was quite novel is the emphasis on family generations, having all the characters in the world aging, new heirs, new people, you know, splintering off from the family trees to go to new jobs. I feel like once you're like a couple generations in, that could make for quite an interesting and rich world of, my son used to be like, is now the shop owner, or they're not your son anymore. Maybe they're your grandfather. You know, I think that could be pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of potential in that one. And I think, again, it may well do quite well because we have a lot of farming games, but this is kind of life and farming in terms of the simulation. Next up, we then got an announcement of the first post-launch Splatoon 3 Splatfest. That's been confirmed. It's Gear versus Grub versus Fun, scheduled for the 24th of September through to the 26th. We won't talk about that too much because we know what that involves, and it's obviously great for Splatoon to get that first Splatfest out there. But then we got quite a big announcement, and it was another Square Enix one, and they announced Octopath Traveler 2 for the Nintendo Switch. It's a 2D HD RPG, very much looking like the first one, but I thought just in terms of the environments, a little more varied, a little more kind of, it's almost like they've taken the lesson of Live Alive and gone, we can do some of that. Because when it first appeared, I actually wondered if this was a Live Alive kind of expansion or something, because it really looked like it. Coming out on the 24th of February, 2023, what was your take on this?
Indeed. Square Enix has very much made a name of these 2D HD games. You know, it's very much their thing. We've had Project Triangle, we've had Octopath Traveler, and we've had Alive Alive. And those were all very kind of similar bar with a steady stream of progression in terms of improving itself. And to be honest, I thought that would be kind of how far it went. And when they announced Octopath Traveler 2, I was a little bit like, oh my god, another one. But when they actually showed the gameplay, I was like, okay, they put in the R&D. You know, it's not just like they've taken a 16-bit RPG and just added some shadows to it. The world is far larger than anything you could expect from one of those older titles. And it may be sprite-based, but the, you know, just the size of the environments, the richness of the world, they've definitely taken what they've learned and pushed it even further. And that's all you can ask for a sequel. That is very exciting to see.
Yeah, I thought it did look like they've put the effort in, and it is out in February, so not that long really. Next up, Phoenix Labs announced Fae Farm, which is it's coming out in spring next year. It's, guess what, a farming game, but this is a fantasy farming game. What was your take on this one?
Yeah, so this is all kind of witchy and magical and whimsical. It has a slightly more gothic aesthetic than any other farm game you would look at before. It's maybe on the AA level. It's not quite as polished as something of like Story of Seasons or even the Last Harvest Moon game. It's a bit below that, but it does have a slightly whimsical, witchy vibe to it. I'm not particularly taken by it, but I think maybe if you've got a slightly witch inclination, it might be a little bit more charming for yourself.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then we had the announcement from Indie Zero of Theater Rhythm. We got Final Bar Line is the new title. It's coming out, published by Square Enix again. It was a very Square Enix heavy direct. A rhythm game featuring 384 Final Fantasy songs coming out on the 16th of February. And then we'll get some DLC from the Saga series, the Nier series, Octopath Traveler, Live Alive. And there's a digital deluxe with 442 songs and a premium digital deluxe with 502 songs. Yeah, I mean, I think for this, you have to be a massive fan of the genre, but also very specifically the Square Enix titles.
Yeah, you know, these Theater Rhythm games are really top-notch. I first joined on with the title on 3DS and really enjoyed it. And you know, to a slight degree, I'm a little bit disappointed because I just don't think it'll be quite the same without a touchscreen. But overall, you know, they're really coming with it. You know, you're getting a lot of music for the price tag of this game. You couldn't buy that and just plain old albums. You can buy music that cheap anywhere else.
Absolutely. Ubisoft then showcased Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hope gameplay. Again, with this one, much like the first one, I'm excited for this because the first game was phenomenally good, even though it wasn't expected. I think if you took just looking at this on its own, you'd probably go, if you hadn't known about the first game, you might have gone, oh, that looks kind of, you know, Rabbids-y and fun. But actually, there's a lot of depth to this, and it looks like they've really gone all out to create a much bigger world.
Indeed. This is a game we've spoken about many times on the podcast. I think the thing that was most interesting for me, having most recently watched the Ubisoft Forward when they showcased this game, is in this one, they've really taken the characters, the world, and the cutscenes, and that's how they've taken to promoting this game. All in the engine, but and technically gameplay, but that's how they've shown it. You know, they've shown you moving around the world, they've shown all the characters you meet. Whereas Ubisoft's focusing more on the RTS elements of it, or the strategy elements. So I have a feeling they're really hoping that this game approaches and kind of attracts a much larger audience than the original. And to be honest, it definitely looks like they've got the budget behind it.
Yeah, it's looking like the Hollywood sequel to the original, so it'll be interesting to see how it goes. Marvelous announced Rune Factory 3 Special for Nintendo Switch, and it's a farming sim and RPG. So combining the two most used phrases of this particular Direct, it's coming out next year. Rune Factory games are generally very strong, and actually I think they're one series that gets overlooked a lot by a lot of the Western audience, and actually I think there's a lot in there. I thought this looked quite impressive, I must admit. It's not one I'm probably going to go for, but I thought it looked solid.
Indeed, and Rune Factory 3 is one of the fan favourites. The one thing I will say, so this is a remake of a Nintendo DS game. They've done a lot of good work in getting it up to a Nintendo Switch level, but it's at the lower end of that Nintendo Switch level, so it is a slightly more crude version. So you aren't getting the most AAA quality experience here, but it does look to be a quality skeleton underneath the meat on show.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, people are very happy to have any, if they're a fan of the series, any of the Rune Factory games on the Switch. But yes, it's interesting to see. They also did announce, though, that there is a new Rune Factory series in development, so we will be seeing more. So I guess this was kind of the placeholder moment, like when we got No More Heroes 1 and 2 instead of No More Heroes 3, and this has happened with many games.
Travis Revenge, yeah, and who knows?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Series of
Strikes
what?
Back.
We do not know. Could be a series of anything. I'm hoping for a series of ramen noodles, because I'm quite hungry right now.
The Ramen Factory instead of the Rune. It could work, you know. We then got a bunch of new Nintendo 64 games, which will make Al very happy. So we should be expecting this year Pilot Wing 64, Mario Party, Mario Party 2. In 2023, we'll get Mario Party 3, Pokemon Stadium, which always is one of the Pokemon games are very much the epitome of the N64 going into the GameCube era for me. Pokemon Stadium 2, 1080 Snowboarding, which I know is a very popular game, and Excitebike 64. But we then got a bit of a pause, and this was probably the surprise of the Direct for me. We're getting GoldenEye with online play on the Nintendo 64. Now, the reason it was a surprise is that there's been all sorts of talk about the licensing of this game and how this would be possible. So to be fair to Nintendo, they've really pulled out the stops to get this to happen, because I don't think this would be an easy game for them to say, we'll take that, please.
Indeed. You know, throughout the Nintendo Direct, there's always like a little blurb of all the copyright. And my God, this had the longest blurb of copyright. I imagine the most recent acquisition by Amazon of MGM is probably one of the gears that helped this finally get moving and off the ground. And maybe the fact that James Bond as a character is kind of in transition from the Daniel Craig stage to whatever will follow in the future. But this is an absolutely exciting thing. Now, all Nintendo Switch games or N64 games on Nintendo Switch have a degree of online play where you can connect to people. But the fact they've really pointed it out, I'm hoping, you know, the dream would be, and this is long shot moonshot mode, I would love matchmaking or even a server browser or something, you know, to really just get playing with anyone. That would be the dream, but nevertheless.
Next up, Doki Doki Grooveworks have announced various Daylife for the Nintendo Switch. It's published by Square Enix again. It's a mundane life sim RPG, and it's out now. Weirdly, I kind of like this idea. I don't know if I'm going to play it, but I'm definitely going to check it out.
Indeed. You know, it looks like a fairly solid game had formerly been released on Apple Arcade. So, you know, to be honest, a lot of the Apple Arcade games that we have had have been of good quality. The one thing I will say, another game by Square Enix, it has the exact same logo as Project Triangle Strategy and Octopath Traveler, and it's also just a rubbish name of a video game. What are they doing over there? Their marketing yeah. team, come on.
Yeah, I agree with that. Wubi Software, I can't remember how you pronounce that, but they've announced Factorio for the Nintendo Switch. It's a construction and management simulation coming out on the 28th of October. And when I first saw this, I kind of went, and then when I saw them kind of building the city and building stuff, I thought, that's addictive. And I think that could be scarily addictive for somebody. This is the kind of game that you could lose hours to.
By somebody, you mean me, Mike. Yeah, I've never seen a game look so simultaneously awful and incredible at the same time. It's got really flat graphics with like really good textures. It's really odd, isn't it?
Yeah, I was exactly the same when I saw it. I was kind of not really sure what was kind of going on. And then as I saw the world kind of come to life, I thought that's a dangerous game to be getting. And next up, Kairi, they announced Ib for the Nintendo Switch, published by Playasm. It's a 2D exploration adventure with horror elements coming out in spring next year. Must admit, I like the look of this one. This was, it gave me kind of slightly horror, but with, I don't know, not Undertale, but just that kind of like real low kind of resolution kind of vibe, and old school kind of graphics, and I thought this looked kind of fun.
Indeed. And you know, it's interesting, I had the exact same thought process where I'm like, it's, you know, in my mind it's ringing the bell next to Undertale, but not Undertale. It is, you know, lo-fi, shall we say. It is,
that's the word I was looking for.
It is simple, but it's purposeful. It gets especially crude as the horror intensifies. And what I find quite novel is it really reminds me of when you'd hear stories of those like creepypastas. It's, you know, a videogame.ext. I'm interested to see what it does and if it's going to challenge the conventions of the fourth wall as it's seemingly stripping away layers of its medium and becoming cruder as the horror intensifies.
Well, one of the best games that I played in terms of atmosphere was the Doki Doki game. I forget the full title, but it does a similar kind of thing with breaking that fourth wall and becoming not what you expect. Not only was it incredibly creepy, and it's a very different type of game, but it just, you never forget it. And I wonder if this is going to be an experience that you'll always remember, this kind of game. There are a few games like that. So this is kind of where I was with that one. Hopefully it is, you know, I really do hope that. Next up, Nintendo showcased Mario Strikers Battle League Free Title Update 2, which added Pauline, Diddy Kong, and more. Is it Paulina? Is it not Paulina? Or is it Pauline? Diddy Kong, either or. And more gear and an extra stadium. It's coming out later this month. Now, this is good because I know people love Mario Strikers, and I know people have said it's a little bare bones. I would have liked a little more from a free update, I must admit, but it's good that they're adding stuff.
Indeed, and the two characters look quite good. Pauline is a good form of representation of a female character, but within of the heavy character class, where Diddy Kong seems to be kind of a fast, up and kind of tumbly sort of character, you know, very much dashing, getting in between people's legs. I like them. I think this is a good DLC if a little bit lacking.
Yeah, agreed. At Koei Tecmo, they announced Atelier Ryza 3, Alchemist of the End and the Secret Key for the Nintendo Switch, published by Square Enix. Not heard that one before. It's an open world RPG. It's coming out on the 24th of February. Another series of games that is really popular. I think this is an older one, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but or maybe it's brand new, I don't know, but I know this series is very popular and there's been a few of these games. And again, it's one I've looked at and gone, that looks pretty good, but it's a time investment.
Indeed. And on one of our Patreon bonus shows, the Roundup, whenever we've had one of these Altair games come through on Nintendo Switch, I kind of have the exact same impression. They are so close to the verge of greatness. You know, this is going to be a game that people that are familiar with the Altair franchise and know how to navigate all the various sub-franchises are going to absolutely adore, because it's looking really, really stunning. It's on the tier of like Dragon Quest XI, another quite exceptional title from Square Enix. But this one is just so close, but not quite there yet. And yeah, I'm very excited to see the day when the franchise is able to make that leap. And who knows, maybe when the reviews come in for this one, it is the one that does it. But what they're showing is just a great kind of step on the steady stream of progress they've been making with the most recent entries in this franchise.
Yeah, we then got some Mario Kart 8 Deluxe news. We're getting Booster Pass Wave 3. We got to see two of the courses they're adding, and those were Merry Mountain from Mario Kart Tour and Peach Gardens from Mario Kart DS. It's coming out this holiday, which, who knows? But yeah, I mean, I haven't even got around to playing the second wave of courses yet, which is not like me, just my time management hasn't allowed me to. But it's good that we're getting the third one soon, and it feels like there's a slightly more steady stream of them appearing now.
Yeah, I'm with you, dude. I haven't done a Volume 2 yet, but nevertheless, I think I'll need to jump in for this Christmassy pack that they've got here. The Merry Mountain looks really, really good, and I think what's exciting about it is it's got the gravity effects from Mario Kart 8. We'll need to ask Alistair about this if that's the case in the Tour version, but having that back in these DLC courses is very nice to see.
It is. We then got some more Nintendo Switch Sports news, which was very welcome, because that game is another game that Nintendo kind of left a little bare bones. It has its moments, but it's still very bare bones. So they've added in golf, which is kind of fun. 21 holes from the Wii Sports game, and you can play them locally or alongside up to 7 other players in survival golf. This has been delayed from this fall to this holiday. It's a weird one, because it's good to have it in there. It doesn't feel like it's the biggest effort in the world for them to add this.
Yeah, I'm very much mixed on it. You know, golf and Wii Sports and the kind of guess Nintendo Sports series, it feels essential in my eyes. So it is disappointing that we never got it. It's exciting that we're getting it, and I'm glad they're making small innovations where they can. I would have hoped that it wouldn't have just been what we had before in terms of courses. I would have hoped for some new ones, but the new Battle Golf does look good. It's basically, rather than taking turns, all the players are playing concurrently, and it looks mad and crazy. And I've got to say, give Nintendo credit, they have delayed it, but I've got to give them a little bit of respect that whenever developers come out and delay stuff, they just announce the new date and then pretend like they didn't delay it at all. I'd like Nintendo just being like, we needed more time. I
liked that they explained that's why they wanted more time, just to make the game better, which is refreshing to hear. Then we got to see Shigeru Miyamoto, which happens on every Direct, but this time he shared an update on Super Mario Bros. The animated movie and Super Nintendo World, which is now coming to America, and Pikmin Bloom. So it was nice to hear short updates on these, and we didn't really hear an awful lot that we didn't know.
Indeed, you know, it's absolutely lovely to see Shigeru Miyamoto. Outside of the Mario movie, we've been seeing him slightly less, but man, I love this man. I'm just happy to see him about. He's looking grey now, and he's done so much good.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we then got the announcement of Pikmin 4, which I think many people maybe expected, if not this Direct, but certainly it didn't come as a huge surprise. But the new game is going to be playable closer to the Pikmin's perspective, which I did like. I like the look of that, and features simplified gameplay. And Miyamoto described it as Dandori, which is a strategic planning and commanding the Pikmin, coming out in 2023. So I don't know, like a RTS meets Lemmings.
Indeed, this game looks absolutely exceptional. I think this will be, when, you know, for the Switch lifetime, with the exception of the Untitled Breath of the Wild sequel that we may get to later. I think it's going to be the technical showcase for the Switch console overall. It looks really, really stunning. And I'm interested to see what they're doing here. Miyamoto let slip back in like 2016, 2017, pre-Nintendo Switch, when I think it was called the Nintendo NX, that Pikmin 4 was done. And it's been like 7 years now. So this is very much a different version of Pikmin. It's clearly been refined and iterated upon. And I really hope this is the moment when, you know, Pikmin games have sold well, but I hope this is a moment when it can go up there to the Animal Crossing, Mario, Zelda level, because Nintendo, this is a franchise they've been putting a lot of love into for a very long time, and proportionally next to a whole bunch of their other IPs, hasn't been getting the respect it really deserves.
Well, the interesting thing about this one is that it's the first Pikmin where I've looked at it and gone, yeah, I might be keen on this. And I think a lot of that is to do with the shift in perspective. And the funny thing is, I know I would have been addicted to the other Pikmin games, but I just didn't get around to it. So I think that you're going to see a lot of people go, I'm going to try this one. I'm going to check it out for the first time, see what the fuss is about.
Yeah, you know, it sounds really, really dumb and oversimplified, but what Nintendo does well is creating these incredibly charming characters, engaging worlds, and at the end of the day, you're just so zoomed out from it in the other Pikmin games. And, you know, getting up close to the, you know, these staple selling point characters, the Pikmin themselves, can actually interact and see how they act with the world, is just going to add a much more captivating layer for new players.
Yeah, absolutely agree. We then got Just Dance 2023 from Ubisoft, and that's coming out the 22nd of November. Not an awful lot new to really tell you about, other than they went big on the BTS Dynamite song during the whole thing. I think that was the feature for the whole thing, which says to me they might be tapping into a teenage market.
Indeed. You know, it is always funny to see the most recent Just Dance games. This one does have a slightly upgraded visual aesthetic in terms of the aesthetics and graphics and the filters that they're applying to their actors, but I do love the irony of them always coming out with these new Just Dance games and being like, there's like infinite songs when you pay for a subscription, but there's not next year's song. You have to buy a new game for that one.
Yeah, completely, completely. It's yeah, it's something. It's the FIFA of dance games. Next up, Square Enix announced Harvestella for the Nintendo Switch. It's an all-new life simulation RPG. It's another Square Enix game.
And another game with farming right at the front of it. This one is very much juxtaposed the video game. It has, oh, you know, charming farming. The end of the world's going to destroy farming. You know, it's not just destroying the world, it's destroying farming. And you must go on this big RPG quest to save farming. It's two video games bolted on. They feel very distant from each other, the farming and the saving the universe plotline. It's wild.
I think you've just accidentally come up to the follow-up title for the day life sim game, Charming Farming. I think that is literally what it's going to be called. So well done, Anton. You should trademark that quickly.
Yeah, before the episode goes out. Trademark.
Yeah,
office.
Absolutely. Do it now. Platinum Games and Sega have announced Bayonetta 3 for the Nintendo Switch. It's an action-adventure game, and it's coming out on the 28th of October. We kind of knew all this, and we got to see a bit more, and that's cool. But sometimes, I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel like when they chuck in a bit more of something we already know loads about, and we're kind of like, it's not that far away, I'm like, maybe just put that in a separate video.
Yeah,
but you know, I can see why, because it's a big franchise. Yeah. And there's a lot of fans. It's probably because I'm not a fan of it. That's probably why.
Yeah, Bayonetta 3 has been a long time coming. It's, you know, they announced that alongside the Nintendo Switch and the original kind of Nintendo Switch presentation, very excitingly called. And it's looking good. I really enjoyed Bayonetta 1 too. My thoughts haven't quite changed since the last event, where I wish it looked a little bit leveled up from Bayonetta 2, but I liked Bayonetta 2. So it's not going to be a bad game. I'm not going to hate it, or unless it's terribly broken, but I have my doubts about that. It's looking all right. In this, they kind of gave a little wee summary of Bayonetta 1 and 2 for people that aren't very familiar. It looks like it's going to have a wacky cast on it. And although ridiculous and technically not good writing, I really liked the writing for the last one. I thought it was very funny and dumb.
Yeah, to be honest, it looks like the kind of game that is going to be super popular. And actually, I think I'd probably enjoy it if I played it as well. I just don't have the love for the series because I've never actually delved into it. It is coming out next month, though, 28th of October. So it's not long to go now. Finally, we'll get to see what it's actually like. Then we had from Spike Chunsoft, who, of course, you'll know from Danganronpa, they announced Master Detective Chronicles Rain Code for the Nintendo Switch. It's a dark and twisted, deceiving title. Now, this one's out in spring 2023. This reminded me of if you took Danganronpa and you took Professor, if you took Ace Attorney, and then you took elements of a couple of other kind of Persona with the dungeon stuff, and you mash them all into a game, you might get something like this.
Yeah, and chuck in some Professor Layton in there. It's a very solid later, title. Yeah. It's, you know, it feels right at home at Nintendo Switch. And the way that Ace Attorney, Professor Layton, and Danganronpa felt so good on a handheld, it has those elements in it. But what I like about it is it's not overly simplified. It has got this slightly more open and big dynamic world, as you say, with something like Persona 5. It really feels like it is taking leverage of the capabilities afforded by the hardware of a Nintendo Switch, but not neglecting the fact it's a handheld game. I really like it. I think they've done a solid thing here, and it's a massive step up, not on quality, but just scale to what Spike Chunsoft have done before with the previous Danganronpa titles. I'm very excited to see if this is the next big game for them.
Yeah, interestingly, this was my surprise excitement pick of the lot of the whole direct. This was the one where I sort of the start of it I kind of watched and thought interesting, and by the end I was like, no, this looks great, this looks really good and really solid, I'm really interested in this one. And that probably is number one in terms of that list for me. Next, Capcom announced, okay, there's a big sigh at the end of this, but I'll read out the games first. Resident Evil 8, which it's a first-person survival horror game, 28th of October. The demo's out now. Winter's Expansion DLC coming out on the 2nd of December. We're also going to get Resident Evil 7, 2, and 3. It's the cloud versions. Now, again, I don't have an issue with some games that we can't run on the Switch being a cloud version. Where I do have an issue is when it's a game that can run quite well on the Switch. I'm looking at you, Kingdom Hearts. And this one, certainly 8, absolutely not a chance that this that's going to be running on the Switch natively. So I think that makes sense. It gives people the opportunity. The other three, I don't know. It's fine. I'm not up or down about this one.
Yeah, this is hugely disappointing. The fact that they're cloud versions. You know, these are fantastic games, and the thing is with horror titles, you don't really need it to be 60 frames per second. Village, you know, it would have been a tough one. It really pushes the consoles hard. But I could have seen 7, 2 and 3, the remakes, they are intensive. The one thing that's got me a little bit nervous is despite how closely they've modeled their logo after, when it comes to the cloud games, there are a lot of, some people have done it in-house, such as Square Enix. They have their own cloud stuff and their own cloud versions in terms of the tech they put behind it. And then there's another company that's done Control and Hitman. And they've modeled their logo after those versions. However, it is not made by those people. So this is clearly an in-house cloud effort from Capcom. And doing cloud hardware is not an easy feat, so I'm hoping this is not another Kingdom Hearts here.
Yeah. I mean, if it's like Control, which or the Hitman, Hitman 3, I think it was, those games played pretty well, I have to say, on the cloud version. So I'm hoping it is. But there is a demo out now, so you can check that out. Is the demo out now? Yes, it is. It is. Okay. Then we had from Slow Clap, they announced Sifu. It's an action roguelike beat 'em up coming on the 8th of November. Yeah, I mean, it looks fun. I can't say I was. Sometimes when I hear the word roguelike, and it's really, really unfair because I know you've talked about how you had your mind turned by a roguelike. So I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt. It looks okay, and I'm sure it'll be good, and it's coming out in November.
Indeed. This was a game that I recall from an old State of Play, and I didn't give it too much mind. And then I've known so many people that have absolutely poured their lives into it, and they have argued furiously about how good it is. And the novel concept of it is basically you're kind of going through your you know, this kind of quest. There's a job to be done, to be infiltrating and to go through, I think, these like 8 levels. And they're long and they're very brutal. And you can basically, you have to beat the game before you're too old. Every time you die, you come back and you give it another go at the next age. So, you know, maybe do it better when you're like 20 and very fit and healthy. Or maybe when you're like 50 and very experienced. Or maybe when you're very experienced but very fragile in your 70s. It is a very much a balancing act, and, you know, hopefully try and get through it before, you know, death has plans for you.
Wow, that suddenly got really dark and slightly introspective there. Anyway, it's time for another Square Enix announcement, and it's Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion for the Switch. It's an action role-playing game. This is a big deal for Final Fantasy fans, especially Final Fantasy VII fans, coming out on the 13th of December. And again, this will make a lot of people really happy.
Indeed. This is actually an odd case of, I think, Square Enix selling themselves a little bit short. This is a remake of the, I believe, 2004-2005 title for the PlayStation Portable Crisis Core, Final Fantasy VII. And Square Enix have very much been like, this is not Final Fantasy VII Remake. And it is definitely not. But it is not a straight port. They've been treating it like it's a port. It has got a lot of work in it. It looks far, far beyond anything that was on a PSP. It shares so little DNA with it. I'm very impressed with the job they've done here. It really looks like a new Final Fantasy game made for Nintendo Switch. I'm very impressed. They've done a lot of work here, and I hope it does well.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I know you've talked about this game before and the fan base that it has, and it being a solid title. So I think it's great we're getting this version on the Switch. It feels like we're, as you said, probably quite lucky in that sense as Switch owners. Treasure then announced Radiant Silver Gun for Nintendo Switch. It's a classic space shooter. It's out now and it looks fine.
Yeah, this one is very much like you need to know sort of game. The Treasure, incredibly talented team. And this is very much the Ringo to the Ikaruga. You know, Ikaruga, everybody knows, everybody loves. This is the lesser known, less exciting version. The gimmick isn't quite as, you know, sellable. Unlike Ikaruga, where, you know, you have the 2 colors, this has 4, and you don't quite get as much of a perk for doing the 4 different colors of antagonists and weapon types. It's very much the proto Ikaruga, but that isn't to say it's a bad game. I've had the opportunity to play it on Xbox Live and it plays lovely. And what I do like about it is, unlike Ikaruga that was designed for a vertical screen, which, you know, there is a flip grip and you can always use vertical monitors, this is in a horizontal 4x3, so it just plays a lot more naturally on the Nintendo Switch, I imagine.
Yeah, and again, this is why I kind of felt it was fine. I mean, Ikaruga is exactly what I thought of. I actually popped out the room and come back and went, oh, it's Ikaruga. No, it's not. And it's fine. It's cool. I'm sure it's actually a lot of fun. And I guess playing it is the thing with these kind of games. You can never really get across in a direct what this game's all about. You have to get hands on with this kind of game. Amplitude Studios then showcased Endless Dungeon for the Nintendo Switch, published by Sega. It's a roguelite tactical action game. This one kind of passed me by though, so you might have to remind me.
Indeed, this one very much feels, you know, like basically The Ascent, but less kind of neon and gritty. And the gimmick here is that it's endless. To be honest, I haven't had enough time to get through The Ascent, so the last thing I was needing was an endless version of it. But I guess for top-down roguelite, it's got a lot of competition. It's not quite standing out in my eyes, despite its polished presentation. It just feels a little bit generic in my eyes.
Yeah, we're getting closer to the end now. And again, at this point, I was hoping for more standout moments. However, there are still one or two to go. And next up, we had from Bandai Namco, they announced Tales of Symphonia Remastered for the Switch. It's an action-packed Tales RPG coming out 2023. Very famous series of games, and again, a strong addition to the library.
Yeah, and this is one that I've always really, really wanted to play. Like the Altair franchise that we discussed earlier in the podcast, the Tales franchise is sprawling and almost a little bit bloated. There are so many entries in this franchise, and it can be a little bit daunting for newcomers to come into it. But basically, all you need to know is apparently, from what I've heard, this is the best version. This is the Final Fantasy VII of the Tales franchise. I believe it was a PS3 title. So on Nintendo Switch, it looks fairly competent in 2022.
Yeah, absolutely. We then got a montage, which was interesting because, again, these are all those the moments where I find hidden gems. And the first one actually is one that I am definitely interested in. That's Life is Strange Arcadia Bay Collection. I'm assuming this is a different game to the other. This is a combination of a couple of the games in the series, right?
Indeed. I believe previously we have had Life and Strange 1 and 2 as a collection, and then we had True Colors, and I believe this is bringing the two of them into the singular collection for the first time.
In fact, I think it's maybe even got... I'll have to double check, but basically, yes, you're right. That's exactly where it's going. I'm really pleased they've done this, actually, because I've held off getting Life is Strange because it's on Xbox Game Pass. I want to play it on the Switch more than I do the Xbox. It's a more, for me, it feels like a Switch game, even though the performance has kind of had a bit of a criticism. I'm really hopeful that they've really kind of nailed it for this, but also I want the collection because I've not played the game. So actually being able to go and play earlier in the series, I think this was downplayed, in my opinion. Being in the middle of a montage, this was actually quite a big announcement.
Indeed. Usually the montages are quite beefy in these Nintendo Directs full of games. So the fact it's actually quite a small montage that makes the games feel almost a little bit singled out, considering how long the Direct is.
Completely. Romancing Saga, Minstrel Song, we're getting that one as well. It's another title which, you know, it's an RPG game. I think the first one is definitely on the Switch. It's very old school kind of RPG. This is a remastered one. We've then also, I'll mention the other ones in the montage. We've got Disney Speedstorm, which we knew about. That's coming out in the winter. Lego Brick Tales, which looks interesting. I think there'll be a lot of kids that'll be really into that. And Fall Guys Season 2, again, I'm really pleased about that because I really have enjoyed Season 1 of Fall Guys, and actually to get some new variations on it will be fun.
Indeed, and by kids we mean Alistair because he is very excited for Brick Tales, and don't blame him, it's looking real good.
It does. It looks solid. Then HAL Laboratory announced Kirby Return to Dreamland Deluxe for the Nintendo Switch, published by Nintendo. It's a remake of the Wii 2D platformer. And I'm really happy it was this one because I've just bought on the 3DS the Robotron game, which is a bit more rare. And I was really worried that I bought that and then suddenly I could have just got it on the Switch and it'll be like the value will dip straight away. However, this was cool. I'm really happy about this one. I'll probably get this one. I've really enjoyed Kirby, the new one, and I'm flying through that at the moment. I'm nearly finished that. I've been kind of dipping in and out. I actually thought I'd lost the cartridge for months, realizing that it was in the Switch, which is really, really poor. But this one's coming out 24th of February, and yeah, I'm happy with this.
Wow, you did the gaming equivalent of having your glasses on your head, but
literally.
Yeah, I'm excited to see this, and I think it's so on brand that Kirby fans are eating so good on Nintendo Switch. We've had a lot of good games, and not to knock Star Allies. Star Allies is an alright game. It was a little content light for a Nintendo Switch game, but let's be real. Return to Dreamland on Nintendo Wii was a bit of a better game with a 4-player co-op. It was solid. It was the first 2D Kirby game after a real, real long time. And now we've gotten a console that's not got motion controls. It was a late era Wii game, so a lot of people missed it by the first time around. I'm just happy to have it. This is going to be, I think, at least in my eyes, the best 2D game or 2D Kirby game on Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, oh, you're about to say something controversial there, but you revised it. And yeah, that was a big one. And then we were told, we've come to the end of the presentation, but one more thing, which is, you know, it's what we expect, and I'd have been very disappointed had there not been one more thing. And unsurprisingly to many, me included, it's A Legend of Zelda announcement, and we now know it's going to be called The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, or Tears of the Kingdom, but I'm assuming it's Tears of the Kingdom because, you know, English language and all that. It's coming out the 12th of May and 2023, and here's another confusing thing for us Brits. The way that they do it there, of course, is 5/12/23, whereas we would put 12/5/23. So at first I was like, wow, the 5th of December next year, that's a long way away, but it's the 12th of May.
Yeah, I was like, oh, of course Nintendo would have pushed this game as far out on the calendar as possible, but no, we're getting a little sooner, so it was a nice kind of revelation once I had a wee look on UK sites. But anyway, delving into the gameplay. This gameplay was absolutely stunning, and I wasn't joking earlier in the podcast when I said I think this will be a technical showcase piece for Nintendo Switch. The absolute scale of the world they're showcasing here is remarkable. It looks absolutely gorgeous, and for a while there, I was, you know, questioning why this game was taking so long if they're reusing so much of Breath of the Wild. It turns out they're not, well, they're using everything from Breath of the Wild, but they've added so much more. It's a brand new game, literally on top of Breath of the Wild. The scale, the verticality, the thing that made Breath of the Wild was so magical was the sandbox. The mix of movement was just so fundamental to that game. There was no limitations on it. And they've, you know, made you godlike in your ability to scale vertically and the mobility of the character. And I'm just absolutely excited for it. I'm a bit surprised by the name. I thought they were going to maybe use the wild prefix in there in the same way they use the, you know, link, link to the past, link between worlds. But title doesn't matter. The box art looks absolutely gorgeous. The art team's killing it. And I think this is going to be a generation-defining title like Breath of the Wild before it.
It really is. And it's the first true Switch-only Zelda game, which is mad when you think about it, because obviously we had Breath of the Wild on the Wii U. So
this is our only Switch-only Zelda game so far.
So far. I mean,
you know,
if we're still
talking,
I mean, 5 years' time, we're waiting for the next Zelda and we're still on the Switch and we're still no sign of a new console. It could happen. I could see it because the Switch is just so incredibly, the longevity is already bigger than we've ever had. Anyway, that's a discussion for another day. What we need to do now is score this direct. So I have Alistair's score. He's just messaged me from the Himalayas to say that he would give it a 6.5. He was pretty disappointed in general. It's Alistair, so, you know, we expect that. So it's almost a compliment at 6.5. The things he said were he was really happy with GoldenEye, which we expected, Pikmin and Breath of the Wild 2, but the rest he wasn't so keen on. So what's your summing up of this one?
This is, I've been really stewing on this since we watched it earlier on today, because I've actually ended up watching this like 3 times. Once when it happened, once to kind of put the notes together, and then once when a roommate was watching it and I was just kind of off playing Rogue Legacy. And it's really hard to put a number on it, because I think this is our fullest direct we've ever had. And the result of that is, there's a lot in it I don't care about, but there's also a lot I really, really care about. And overall, I think the heavy hitters are so heavy hit. Legend of Zelda, Pikmin, maybe that's just two heavy hitters. Fire Emblem, you know, it's really got some heavy hitters in there. So I'm going to go for an 8.5.
Wow, okay, that is a good score. I think. So I had a very different feeling of this one when I watched it. And it was partly because I was distracted and I was doing other things. And also because for me, there weren't that many games in there that I'm going to rush out and buy. Having said that, so at first I was kind of slightly disappointed, but there were some big games. So Fire Emblem, I was really impressed with that, even though I'm probably not anytime soon going to be playing it. But I was really impressed with it. It looks amazing. Xenoblade's looking great. The DLC is good. Zelda, no question about that. So I was impressed with it. But personally, I was feeling it as a really quite a low score, my lowest ever. And I was actually toying with the idea of coming into this with a 5/10. Personally. However, having gone through everything again, what I've actually realized is that there were a few games in there that I'm actually really excited about. And there are other games where maybe I didn't quite pay attention enough to realize that I'm excited about them. So I've revised my score, and I actually think on a personal level, there's probably four or five games in there. Like you said, there's so much in there and there's a lot of RPG. It's very RPG and farm sim heavy, but there are some real gems in there. And I'm going to revise that and call it a 7. And I think that's fair. It's not my favorite direct because it's not full of games I want to buy. And all the stuff, there's a lot of kind of DLC stuff and extra stuff, which is cool and a lot of games I like, but it wasn't enough for me to go, wow. However, I think if you're an RPG fan, a big RPG fan, or a farm sim fan, you're probably calling that a 12 out of 10.
Yeah, even though I put my number in there, I'm still thinking like, maybe it's an 8, maybe it's not, I'm not too sure, maybe it's a 7. I think 8.5 is as high as I'm going, so. But anyway.
I think just before we finish up, I think going through it together, that's really helped me kind of figure out how I feel about it, because I wasn't sure how I felt about this one. I felt quite disappointed, I guess is the word. However, having gone back through it, I'm less disappointed because now we've analysed and I've gone, no, that's something I'll play. Yeah, I like that. So yeah, I think 7 is fair for me, and an 8 and a 6.5, which averages out at about a 7 something. So I think that's about fair. And yeah, it's been wonderful to be back on the show. And in all seriousness, apart from all the things that Alistair tells you I've been up to, you know, I have been listening in and I've been really enjoying it. And you know, my life has caused me to be a little absent of late. However, I am hoping to be a little more here for it if I can. But it's been fantastic catching up. And what better way than to talk about a direct?
Indeed. You know, the Square Enix Directs really brought farming this year. And I wish everybody a very farming-filled 2022. And it's been an absolute pleasure podcasting with you once again. And hopefully you won't be a stranger.
I'll try not to be. And yeah, big shout out to Square Enix for, you know, hijacking the direct. And we'll see you again for the main episode. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Talk soon. Goodbye.
Au revoir.